National news from a grassroots perspective. You're listening to Groundwire, community news from coast to coast to coast.
Hello and welcome to Groundwire. This is Audrey Abraham.
And I'm Gretchen King.
Groundwire is a grassroots news program brought to you by the National Campus Community Radio Association.
Today on the ground.
Earlier this month, around 100 migrants and their supporters descended on the Immigration Detention Center in Laval, Quebec. During the protest, a gate was torn down and a group of protesters breached the perimeter. Stay tuned for a full report.
We'll also hear updates from the Reconciliation Framework Agreements in Canada. For some Indigenous communities, they are the first to be signed with provincial or federal representatives. We'll hear a report from the territory of the Shuapmik people located on unceded land in British Columbia.
And later on in the episode, we will hear about a petition to the Bank of Canada demanding more women on Canadian currency.
All that, plus a community radio report on the 30th anniversary of the World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters. That's coming up on this edition of Groundwire, but first up, here are the headlines.
Education for All is a call for safe and secure access to education for children without immigration status. Just days before school are set to open, the Education Across Borders Collective is pressuring the Quebec government to remove restrictions on access to education for non-status children in primary and secondary schools. Despite promises back in June from Education Minister Murray Malavoie to implement new measures to make education more accessible for non-status children, lack of government action since the announcement 2 months ago has intensified the campaign from the collective. The collective hopes the province will follow in the steps of other cities. In Toronto, similar barriers were removed back in February due to a similar campaign.
Toronto Police Constable James Frasilio has been charged with second-degree murder in the death of 18-year-old Sammy Yatim. The incident took place on a streetcar in the early hours of Saturday, July 27th. With Yatim allegedly brandishing a knife, the police responded by firing 3 shots, and after Yatim fell to the ground, Toronto Police fired 6 more shots. A taser was also released shortly after. Critics of the shooting argue the firing of a taser and 9 shots is excessive. They also say police officers failed to adequately de-escalate the situation prior to the shooting. Several rallies were held in solidarity with the Yatim family. The demonstrations are also in response to the escalation in police violence perceived in Toronto and elsewhere in Canada. Following public pressure, the Ontario Ombudsman announced on August 8th an inquest will be launched into police training and procedures on dealing with people in crisis and de-escalation techniques.
2 Canadians were arrested in Egypt. Filmmaker John Grayson and Dr. Tarek Loubani were detained in Cairo on August 16th. The pair was headed to the Gaza Strip to begin work at the Al-Shifa Hospital in collaboration with the University of Western Ontario. Tarek Loubani, an emergency room medical doctor, arrived in Cairo as part of an academic partnership between Canada and Gaza. The project brings doctors from Canada to Gaza to train in advanced cardiac life support and advanced trauma life support. John Grayson, an award-winning filmmaker and professor in the Department of Film at York University, planned to produce a film in the Gaza region. The two were set to depart for Gaza on August 15th, but were delayed due to the volatility in Egypt. It's believed that Loubani may have lent his emergency medical skills to those in need, accompanied by Grayson, at the time of their arrest. The Canadian consulate has been in contact with local authorities.
The Thunder Child First Nation Administration has launched an injunction against band members protesting oil exploration on ceremonial land. Grassroots members of the community are challenging seismic testing, drilling, and other activities on sacred Sundance land, located about 100 kilometers northwest of North Battleford, Saskatchewan. The Thunderchild Band Council approved exploration by Lornell Consulting on behalf of Tornair Energy on July 4th. The injunction was launched so the industrial work could continue without interruption. Women have been leading actions against seismic activity. Protesting band members set up prayer flags and ceremonial cloths in early August, but these were torn down by contractors and equipment entering the site. The injunction from the council is being brought against several band members, and the court heard the application in Saskatoon just last week.
Thanks to Olivia Becko from CKUT for those headlines. Before we break and return with features, we would like to invite all Groundwire listeners to check out archives of this program online at groundwire.ncri.ca. We'll be right back.
For this episode's Community Radio Report, Catherine Garvin covered the 30th anniversary of the World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters.
Welcome back to Under the Olive Tree, live on location at the 30th anniversary event of the AMARC World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters at the UQAM campus in downtown Montreal. I'm joined now with Marcelo Solvervicens, the Secretary General of AMARC. Thank you, Marcelo, for joining us on Under the Olive Tree.
Hi, Catherine.
What is AMARC? What does the abbreviation AMARC stand for? When was it created and why?
Well, AMARC was created in the first conference of community radio broadcaster here in Montreal in 1983, in the same university where we are celebrating the 30 years, the same 15th of August. The name of AMARC stands for the French acronym that says Association Mondiale d'Artisans des Radios Communautaires. But I would say that was a key moment where people came together, and I would say there's no, until today, 30 years later, there's no other global organization representing the community radio sector. Mm-hmm. So AMARC has accompanied during this 30-year establishment in more than 127 countries all over the world, community radios.
This year's AMARC event is to celebrate 30 years of AMARC community radio throughout the world. When you look back on the 30 years, what are some highlights that come to mind for you?
Well, I would say that the key highlights is the development of community radio worldwide. I would say when the meeting in 1993 was done, there were people from some countries in Latin America, I would say, not all of them, some countries in Africa, mainly connected to, South Africa, for instance, other places, but not very many, some places in Europe, connected to the French experience, Netherlands, others. Asia-Pacific was none. What was important then, and the key highlight of AMARC, is to develop a discourse of this third sector.
The theme of this year's AMARC anniversary event is AMARC 30 Years Community Radios, the World Movement. Mm-hmm. Could you explain to us why AMARC chose this particular theme?
Yeah, I would say that AMARC was born as a movement and has kept like that until now. Its strength comes from what we call a communication rights movement.
We've just been talking with Marcelo Solvervicens, the Secretary General of AMARC, about the importance of community radio and this year's AMARC 30th anniversary event.
Thanks to CKUT's Catherine Garvin for Groundwire's Community Radio Report. Groundwire will be back after this musical break. Stay tuned.
It was pure, the land was secure for years to come. That's when water was clear, drinkable by everyone. No clear cuts, no roads or pipelines.
no trains, no silver, no copper, but gold mines. Before industry and economics ruined the culture, way before styrofoam, oil, and sulfur. When the rivers turned red, when salmons ruled the water, before smallpox, before my people were slaughtered. When the land brought us life, gave us food for our seeds. When the trees grew large, giving us air to breathe. This was way before money, before an American dream. When the trees were red, when the mountains were green. Before chemical waste for greed took over, before people and the culture both would look over. A new world, untouched and not spoiled. Before mills, gases that kill and wars for oil. So welcome to beautiful BC, where we got beautiful lakes and beautiful trees. Where we got big mountains and beautiful streams. But I'll tell you this much, yo, it ain't what it seems. So welcome to beautiful BC, where we got beautiful lakes and beautiful trees. Where we got big mountains, beautiful streams. But I'll tell you this much, yo, it ain't what it seems. The culture's fading and my people be sleeping. The language is down while my people be dreaming. Money is power, well power comes respect. Everybody's all hustling while the world's getting wrecked. We got greenhouse gases, cities that be massive. Liquor stores and bars, my people getting plastic. So I sit and think of all the species extinct. Global warming is a warning and I'll write it in ink. Tell all my people that be lost having a drink. Tell them how it is, and how it is this week. I can't even go down and have a drink from my creek. I can swim in the river, but the river ain't clean. We used to all be warriors, but now we all fiends. And since we're stuck in a dream, we plot and scheme. Will the air be polluted? I can feel it when I breathe. From all these pulp mills and the rest of these things. So welcome to beautiful BC, where we got beautiful lakes and beautiful trees. Where we got big mountains and beautiful streams.
Welcome back to Groundwire, a bi-weekly non-profit national news program produced by the community for the community. Groundwire is heard on dozens of community radio stations across Canada. And now for our feature stories.
Following the implementation of mandatory detention policies through Bill C-31, protesters gathered outside of a detention center near Montreal. Aaron Lakoff from CKUT filed the following report for Groundwire.
Silhouettes depicting loved ones who've been removed and bright banners were hung to the fence. Messages of solidarity in Arabic, Hungarian, Spanish, Urdu, English, and French were read aloud, while remnants of clothing were strung along the length of the wall, symbolizing the violence experienced at border crossings around the world.
Immigration detention centers are basically prisons. The conditions that people are in are degrading and inhumane. There are even children who end up in detention centers. Migrants are criminalized. They are seen as inherently criminal just for the fact that they chose for whatever reasons, sometimes reasons out of their own control, to immigrate to Canada, and they're being held simply for the act of migrating.
During the picnic, someone from inside informed the organizers that because of the demonstration, visiting hours had been canceled all day, prisoners were being punished by having prayer time revoked, being prohibited from smoking, and being confined to their rooms. Enraged by this news, people rushed back to the outer fence of the detention center and began banging on its metal gates. Soon after, the gate was torn down and a group of protesters breached the perimeter and managed to take their rage directly outside the buildings where migrants are caged. In the end, no arrests were made. While the act of tearing down the wall was symbolic, it was still one step towards taking down all prison walls and borders that separate people throughout the world.
We started by breaking a wall, and we will continue until all walls have fallen, until, again, all borders are rid of, and all nation states are smashed, and where no one is prevented from moving across the street or across the sidewalk or from one place to another, irrespective of how far it is, that people are treated with dignity.
You are just listening to CKUT's report on a recent protest outside a detention center for migrants. Groundwire will be right back.
Sick of corporate news? Would rather hear from people in your community and communities across Canada? Tune out the static and tune into Groundwire. 30 minutes of grassroots news produced by independent, on-the-ground journalists and campus community radio stations from coast to coast to coast. To listen, contribute, or learn more, visit groundwire.ncra.ca. This is a project of the National Campus and Community Radio Association, made by you, for you.
The Reconciliation Framework Agreements are significant in that they are the first to be signed among some First Nation communities. For the Shuswapmik Shuswap peoples, their traditional territory is unceded and it is not covered by a treaty. The Reconciliation Framework Agreement would change that. CFBX has the story.
This year at the annual Kamloopa Powwow, spectators got to witness the making of some local history. Elected chiefs from five Sequim Indian bands formalized their relationship with the province of British Columbia by signing reconciliation framework agreements. Shane Godfredson, chief of the Tecumloops Indian Band, said in a statement to the Kamloops Daily News, quote, "It's rebuilding the relationship, that's what it is," end quote. Formalizing a legal relationship with the province is a significant step for Aboriginal groups in British Columbia, but in what direction are those steps taking the Aboriginal peoples affected? Ryan Day is an economist and works for the Sequimic Health Caucus as a hub coordinator. He feels the agreements will actually work to dismantle the relationship that Sequimic have had with their land for thousands of years.
It's one thing to be dispossessed, but you're not a truly conquered people until you accept your oppression. And in many ways, these reconciliation agreements, they're an acceptance of that. And so we can view them as an endgame in that way, because you've accepted that the jurisdiction over really your self-determination as Indigenous people, which is your ability to exercise your responsibilities on the land, you've accepted that they're not yours anymore. And I'm purposely saying responsibility, not rights, because we really get stuck on our rights and title when on a fundamental level it's our responsibility to exercise those. And so, from a Western perspective, we have title to this land. We have the underlying title. From an Indigenous perspective, the responsibilities that we're required to carry out.
Gary Godfredson is a renowned Sequim author and poet. For Gary, the reconciliation framework agreements not only work to sever a relationship with the land based on obligations, but is a foothold for a foreign system of values that contradicts Sequim laws and beliefs.
There's a term we have, it's called samasjut. It's where you think you captured that heart of a white man instead of the Indian. Those are the ones that are pushing for economic development. Those are the ones that are pushing for these words that are swinging off this big word called reconciliation and apology. They're looking at short-term wealth based on Euro-Canadian value systems of wealth. Our system of wealth is how healthy your children are, how many grandchildren you have, how well you treat your relatives, how you're willing to stand for that land and your family. That is what we consider wealthy. We are speaking on behalf of our nation and future generations, our relations, all entities, land, water, animals, and plants. When we declare that our water and salmon are sacred. As Sequim, we are collectively responsible to take care of our land and water, to uphold all our responsibilities and follow our natural laws, as was passed down to us from Tegalcoopi and our ancestors. Therefore, we will not, under any condition, compromise the health of our water and our future generations. We unanimously agree that all mining is detrimental to the health of our nation's water. The proposed Reddick Creek project, as well as other proposed and existing mining projects in Sequim Ulugh, unsurrendered, unceded Sequim territory, is a violation against our existing Sequim natural laws, in that our water, sacred headwaters, and birthing waters is at risk of being destroyed forever. We deny Canada, the province of British Columbia, corporations, or any native bands have the right to make any decisions on our land and water, as it is our collective responsibility as a nation. Therefore, we will not, under any condition, support or take part in signing agreements, joint revenue sharing, or any other documents that compromise our responsibility. As Sahuapmuh, we will not accept any monies or incentives from these mining corporations wanting to mine within our Sahuapmuh Uluh boundaries, declared at Misconlet February 8, 2013, by Sahuapmuh.
For Groundwire, I'm Chris Albanetti in Kamloops, British Columbia, on Sequimut territory.
Thanks to CFBX for that story. For similar reports, check out the Resonating Reconciliation Project online at www.ncra.ca/resonating.
People have complained about the new plastic polymer banknotes ever since they were issued by the Bank of Canada earlier this year. But one Victoria woman objected to the new bills for a different reason. The bills didn't feature any women. Myrna Forster, a Victoria-based historian, was shocked to hear that they were removing the image of the famous five, the five Albertans who championed legal personhood for women in favor of an icebreaker. She started a petition on change.org asking for the Bank of Canada to put more women back on the currency. CHRW's Ed von Adderkes interviewed her.
Thanks for joining me today. Can we just get started by you telling me who you are and what you do for a living, just for the listeners?
Great. I'm Myrna Forster. I live in Victoria, BC, and I'm a historian and an author. And my personal goal is to try and promote great Canadian women from our history and to try and make sure that they're not forgotten.
Excellent. So I see you have a petition up on change.org asking for the Canadian government to put more women on the new Canadian dollar bills. Can you tell me how you got started on this issue?
You know, I do try and promote famous and forgotten faces in Canadian history. So I was a bit shocked when in early December 2011, I'd been hearing a lot about the new polymer notes and how great they were going to be to prevent forgery. But it was only just about as the notes were to roll off the press that I actually realized that the only women who have ever made it to our Canadian banknotes were going to be removed with these changes. Now, it was back in 2004 that the famous five and activist Thérèse Cassegrain were put on the $50 bill. And, of course, it was a landmark, and a lot of people were very excited that finally actual real Canadian women were going to be on the banknotes. So it was a bit of a shock when it was announced that the women would be removed from the new polymer bills and they would be replaced by an icebreaker. Now, of course, the Queen of England does appear on some of our banknotes, and the Bank of Canada did include a no-name Jane Doe image of a woman looking at a microscope. But why do that when there are real Canadian women who are scientists? So I was discouraged about this turn of event and started off by writing an op-ed piece for the Times Colonist here in Victoria where I live. You know, aside from whether or not the famous five and Thérèse Cassegrain were able to continue on those notes, it's not my only point, because I know the Bank of Canada, when they were asked about why these women were removed from the bills, they said, this was spokesman Julie Girard, "We've had the privilege to feature the famous five on the 50 for the last series. Now it's our opportunity to celebrate new things." And I realize that, you know, from time to time they do issue new series. However, it does seem to me that, you know, if the famous five and Thérèse were on those bills for a while, it would be logical to replace them with other notable women in Canadian history, not an icebreaker.
Yeah, so my question to you is that if you were to feature other notable women, who would you pick?
There are so many to pick from, but just, you know, off the top of my head, one of them could be Agnes MacPhail, who, of course, was our first female parliamentarian. Another could be Viola Desmond, the civil rights icon from Nova Scotia, who stood up for racism after she was thrown out of a theater there for having the gall to sit in a whites-only section of a theater. Or, I mean, how many people have heard of Hilda Ranscombe, an important hockey star? I mean, in her day, people said that she was like the female Wayne Gretzky of her time. I think, you know, hockey is big in Canada. That would be great to have her and maybe another male hockey star. You know, the list goes on and on. There are so many people who could be considered.
Yeah, those all sound like amazing choices to be featured mm-hmm. on our currency. Mm-hmm. So when you saw that it would be replaced with icebreakers, that was a bit of a disappointment. Do you have anything else you want to add to this?
I must admit, I was sort of discouraged about all of this, but I was energized by the recent turn of events in the United Kingdom, where, as you no doubt know, they had a very successful campaign led by Carolyn Criado Perez. And with her petition, I mean, she got over 35,000 people who signed that. And they raised over, $20,000 to threaten a legal challenge. And there was incredible media attention in the UK. So quite quickly, after Mark Carney became the governor of the Bank of England, there was a complete turnaround. And initially he announced that within a few weeks, there would be a decision announced on the issue that had been raised that Elizabeth Fry was going to be replaced by Winston Churchill, and again leaving the country with no identifiable British women on the notes except for the Queen.
Mm-hmm.
So there was the big public uproar, and as you know, a little while ago, Mark Carney announced that Jane Austen would be on a new note. So there was a decision made immediately, or within a few weeks of him coming, that this specific woman would go on the notes. Well, I was contacted, actually, by Carolyn Criado Perez in the UK a few weeks ago, and we were discussing our various campaigns, and so she urged me to start the petition. She found that was a very useful thing to do, so she put me in contact with someone in Canada at change.org, and we set up the petition a few days ago. So I think that was a good idea, and I can only hope that we start getting some support for that.
Okay, thank you so much, Myrna. Is there anything else you want to add before we wrap this up?
Let's see. I just think there's a wonderful quote that I'd just like to share. When these changes were made in Britain and it was announced that the Bank of England would include Jane Austen, one of the British journalists who praised this action was Danica Kirka, and she said, "This decision is a sign that there is plenty of pride and little prejudice against women on the country's currency." So I just can't help but think, can the same be said in Canada? Or are we to assume that the approach of the Bank of Canada indicates plenty of prejudice and little pride in Canadian women?
That was Myrna Foster. Thanks to CHRW for that Groundwire feature.
That's all for this edition of Groundwire.
Groundwire is a grassroots news program brought to you by the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
And all our episodes are available for listening and podcasting at groundwire.ncra.ca.
If you're interested in contributing as a journalist, get in touch with us by email at groundwireprod@gmail.com.
This edition was hosted and produced by Audrey Oberham and Gretchen King at CKUT in the area of Jojage, otherwise known as Montreal, Quebec. We thank our contributors, Olivia Bacco, Catherine Garvin, Chris Albanati, and Ed Van Aderkas.
From all of us at Groundwire, thanks for tuning in.